bring us down the home stretch.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Doug Potts from the regional office. Again, here talking to you about standardized bycatch reporting methodology draft amendment. Again, I'm here as part of the SBRM-F MAT, which has members from both councils, the ASMFC, the regional office, and the science center. We've met several times in this. I think the question everybody has is why am I back again? We just presented the draft amendment at the April meeting, which you may recall, because of the short timeline, the amendment was available to you. There was no vote on the draft amendment, so I'm back today to present the draft amendment to you, and well, not to go through it all again, skip that this time, you saw it last time, and then hopefully see if we can move the draft amendment out for public hearing. In addition, since the April meeting, there were a couple of small changes to the document that you should be aware of, and I'll go over those. One was a refinement to what we're calling the penultimate alternative, improvement to that. There was a call of the FMAT, and this was discussed there. And then additionally, there's a new set of alternatives for a sort of complete the loop to cover if there's very low funding, but I'll cover that a little bit more later on in this talk. So there's a couple of items. This is the table we've had of the various elements and the alternatives that are in this document. you'll see that the element 6 of the prioritization process, which was the main focus of the FMAT's work, addressing the deficiencies found by the court. Last time I was here, there was parts 6.1 and 6.2, which are the funding trigger and how resources are reallocated if there is a shortfall in funding in a given year. The new item this time is the item 6.3, which is the sort of less than minimum pilot coverage. Again, I'll cover that a little bit more, but there are three alternatives that are going to be under that alternative, under that element. Trying to move through. So as I mentioned, the prioritization process has three components. One essentially is the trigger. This is how we determine what are the available funds. Second part is how we reallocate days if the trigger condition is met, so only on days in years when there is insufficient funding to fully fund SBRM. And the final one, the SBRM now has an option for or a coverage for minimum pilot coverage so that every fleet ends up having a minimum amount of coverage that provides useful discard data for a given year. So no fleets end up getting zero coverage. But with a world of minimum pilot coverage, there becomes a possibility that in some year the funding is so restrictive that there's not even enough to cover that minimum for all fleets. And then you would have to figure out what do you do in that case. Do you not cover some fleets so that other fleets can have useful coverage? So we'll talk about that. Again, I'm not going to go into too much detail on these because this hasn't changed since the last time you saw it, just that the trigger portion has two elements. One, the status quo, which is actually found deficient by the court, but allows for available funding and sort of an ad hoc approach to or determining how much funding is available. The second one involves identifying specific funding sources that will then be used for SBRM. For what's been allocated in the Northeast region. Just as an illustrative example, these are the four lines that we're including in this alternative. The percentages shown are the amount that has been allocated to the Northeast region on average since from 2010 to 2012. It's what's in the past. It's not necessarily indicative of what will necessarily be allocated to the region in the future. There was one question raised that I wanted to point out. The Northeast Fisheries Observer Program has a 98%. The reason that's not 100% is that there is some amount that covers overhead that is held at the NOAA level or the NIMS headquarters level, and so doesn't make it to the region, and that just reflects overhead charges for funding lines as they come through are allocated out to the region. So all of that is sort of essentially 100%, but there is overhead recognizing that happens at the headquarters level. And it also mentions that there is funding for observers that is other sources than these and would be used outside of SBRM, specifically Marine Mammal Protection Act money, sometimes ESA, and then money for catch share coverage or at sea monitoring would be outside of this section. Element 6.2, the C-day adjustments, there were three mins of that. There was the status quo, a proportional reductions, and penultimate. I should also mention one other thing that I'm going to have in this talk, and that was a development since April. We had the Science Center colleagues conducted a analysis, an illustrative example of the comparison between proportional approach and the penultimate approach. That's been provided to you as part of an appendix to the document, the draft document. So I'm just going to point out a couple of those additional information that you now have to compare these two alternatives. Again, status quo is what was in the 2007, reflects how it was run in the 2007 SBRM amendment. However, it was found to be deficient by the court. I won't go through all the details back and forth with the council. The proportional approach, and this is a little bit more detailed than was in the April talk, there's a system going through where you would deduct off the minimum pilot coverage, that's MPC, from the top, and then find out what the proportional shortfall is, the number of funded days minus pilot coverage divided by the amount of adjusted days that you needed, and then you rescale all of the fleet, so all of the fleets end up having the same proportional reduction, and then you would add back in the pilot days to find out what your prioritized days are. Just as an example to run through this, the illustrative example using the 2012 funding lines, you can see these are the various funding sources for SBRM. There are the four of them that are SBRM applicable, and two of them that are not SBRM but still offer at-sea monitoring coverage. And then this is just for the 2012, the percentage of the days that come from each of those lines. Line items. This is a little hard to see, but work through it. This is an example of how the system runs through. You see in red for each fleet ends up being the single fleet and species combination that is the driver for each of those fleets that has the highest number of days required. You see the purple line is scallop dredge. That's the industry-funded line, so that just differentiates that from the other ones. As you move through. For the proportional example, this shows you on the first column the number of sea days for the minimum pilot coverage, the MPC, how many you would need. Then the next column is how many comes out of the estimation for the 30% CV. Next one showing deducting the minimum pilot coverage from the total needed, and then a rescaling of those show how each line is all proportionally reduced. The days are then, the minimum pilot coverage is added back in, and then there's additional days that come from other funding sources that are included, and then you end up with the full number of days that would be allocated in a given year. Again, this full example is in that appendix. This is just a few rows to show an example of what that comes up with. The penultimate approach, which is another one we had, is a way of the intention of this alternative was to affect the least number of fleet species combinations, so there would be the fewest number of cells that end up with a higher than 30% or whatever the performance standard CV is. In this case, we'd use a ranking across the fleets to respect the sequence of differences, and you use the difference. The difference between now and what I presented in April is using the difference between days and not simply the total number. There's a couple of slides coming that will show this much more clearly than trying to describe it in text. Here we have four example fleets, otter trawls for the Mid-Atlantic and New England large and small mesh, and you'll see each species group that is affecting the or has needed coverage is ranked in order descending across, so red crab to turtles to small mesh groundfish in order. You then figure out what is the difference from the first cell to the next cell, so how much you would save in sea days from eliminating a cell. And you can then rank those to show which one would give you the most savings by eliminating it. You see in the example that I gave in April, The first cell to be removed would have been the red crab for large mesh mid-Atlantic because that had 5,558 days. But you see, by removing that cell, you've saved 2,599, whereas in the one below that, large mesh New England, if you took out the red crab cell, you actually saved 3,000 days. So even though it's a lower number, it's a larger savings in sea days to let that single cell have a higher than 30% CV. So that's the difference in this approach from what I presented in April is targeting to the difference instead of to the absolute number. So again, as we show, you would then sequentially remove days, each cell, hitting one at a time until you make up the shortfall in funding for the year, affecting the fewest number of days. And then here's a sort of an example of what that would look like in the end, what days come out. Again, there's more a fuller example in the appendix that was in the document that was presented. I've used this sort of example before just to show you what this looks like in a different sort of graphic sense. The curves are the CV on the y-axis and the number of sea days needed to achieve the CV. The dotted line, the horizontal dotted line, is the 30% mark. And you see in this one, since red crab was the driving one, if you eliminate that, you would save a significant number of days. So that's how that one works. These are examples that came out of that illustrative example that's been recently done, showing what would happen under the two different prioritization alternatives. It's hard to tell the difference between green and blue on this projector right now, but green lines are if using the proportional approach, and the blue lines for the penultimate approach. The point of this slide really is to show that in one case, the proportional approach results in more sea days for a fleet. In another, the penultimate would result in more days. So it's not a there's not a universal one alternative always gives you more days for every fleet. It's just how it comes through. So it's just to make you aware of that. This also highlights the large mesh mid-Atlantic. You see the table on the right. Although the prioritization process would have knocked this down to either 163 days or 684 days, I believe that is. You'll note there's a note there that 1,271 days would have actually been added in from non-SBRM sources. This is, I believe this would free from at-sea monitoring, other sector monitoring, or also MMPA. So just that there are sources of observer days outside of SBRM now. So now to talk about that new alternative that we had just this time. The minimum pilot coverage is a measure of three trips per quarter, and it uses the average trip length for a particular fishing mode. It is a way of assuring that we have usable discard estimate for all fleets, so no fleet ends up with zero coverage. However, that introduces the potential that in a given year you may end up with funding that's below the minimum pilot coverage for all fleets. So how would you necessarily treat that? The FMAC came up with three alternatives to consider for this. One would be to assign coverage ad hoc in a given year, and I'll go through each of these in a little bit more. The second one is to, and the other two use a more formulaic approach, much like we have for the prioritization of the penultimate approach, to try to take out discretion, as the court had commented. One is to eliminate fleets that have the highest minimum pilot coverage days, so they knock those off, and then basically filling in all the rest of the fleets. The other one is to use the formula of minimum pilot coverage for the fleet to days absent from the previous year from the VTRs. It's a measure sort of the effort in the fishery or how active that particular fishery is. But I'll show you this in a second. So as far as our ad hoc approach, the vision of this, if this was the option, would be if the funding was that limiting in a given year, that not only was the prioritization process triggered, but that there wasn't enough even to reach minimum pilot coverage on all fleets, it would have to come to the councils with a proposal of this, details of the shortfall, and recommendations of what fleets would receive coverage and which ones would not, and explain the considerations that were taken to come up with that proposal. It would then allow councils to then have a public meeting and make a recommendation to any revisions or considerations that should be made. As far as the eliminating with the highest minimum pilot coverage, this just shows an example. Because this hasn't actually happened, the funding limit in here is fictitious. They think they just used 1,000 days, I think it was. Yeah, just an arbitrary limit of 1,000 days to show that that would trigger needing to have not enough for the minimum pilot coverage. In this example, just to note, since minimum pilot coverage is 3 trips per quarter, this alternative would affect fleets that have the highest average trip length. Since it would always be 3 trips, the ones with the highest average trip length would be the ones that would really eliminated coverage if this sort of limiting funding were to ever happen. The third alternative, I should say, for this is a ratio. Again, it's the ratio of days absent from port from the VTRs the previous year, which is essentially a proxy for how active a fishery is, a fishery that has a lot of days used, but a ratio of the number of minimum pilot coverage days needed for that fleet. In this case, you can see, it's hard to read here, but there's a ratio rank column here that would just show which one would be removed first as it would move through. There's a fuller example, again, in the appendix that you have, but that's the alternative the FNet has come up with for this. Additionally, I wanted to make sure that the council was aware there are, I don't think I highlighted this. This was brought to my attention at the last alternative. In addition to the elements that we are proposing, because the full amendment was vacated by the court, we'd have to come back with the full amendment be passed again. It was the directive of the councils to the FMAT that we keep as much of the original alternatives as possible, and that's been done and through most of the elements. But I wanted to make sure the council was aware there are alternatives that were considered but rejected in the 2007 amendment, and some that were considered for that in this amendment. So in the 2007 SBRM amendment, the FMAT, the councils had come through and considered alternative CV levels, whether or not that quarterly discard reports instead of the annual reports that were adopted in that action. Some additional mechanisms to collect bycatch information, but were not settled on, and then setting coverage levels based on non-managed species, not just those that are afforded protection under an FMP or ESA. Those were all considered and rejected in 2007. The new things here, I had mentioned at a previous meeting, probably October of last year, the FNet had looked into doing prioritization by adjusting the filter cut points. And the issue with that is it had sort of erratic results and didn't effectively address prioritization. It was dropped by the FMAT, but I wanted to make sure I brought that forward. I have a slide in hand if anybody wanted to see that, but that has been talked about previously. Additionally, there was a point, there was a letter after the April meeting that was sent to us from Oceana highlighting some points about the draft amendment as it was, and they did raise an issue of excluding the protected species, particularly turtles, from the prioritization process. The FMAT did discuss this in some in our phone call and concluded that if the turtles were excluded from prioritization and it were a point where prioritization were triggered, that the funding was limiting enough that you had to have coverage, the need, if they were excluded, then coverage for turtles would end up driving everything. The entire prioritization process would go to, I believe it was 2 different fleets, would be the only ones to get coverage. And so it was the consideration of the FMAT that they should be treated as other species for the purposes of prioritization. And I just wanted to bring that forward to the council for council's consideration on this. Again, there's a large list of alternatives. I went through all of them at April, so I didn't want to go through all of them again today. But this is a slide that shows everything that we have out here, including the new one. Six is prioritization process. Actually, this slide is the wrong slide. I accidentally put it in there. There should be 6.1, 6.2, and 6.3. 6.3 isn't included in this particular slide, but that, as I discussed earlier, it talks about the new minimum pilot coverage alternative. Where we are with the action right now, this was presented to the Mid-Atlantic Council last week. They approved the draft amendment to go out for public hearing. If the New England Council agrees and takes this document out for public hearing, we will complete the update of the document. You'll note in some points there are some things that need to be updated and some corrections that need to be, or some more details that need to be put in, particularly Option 4, the annual report. There are a few minor changes to the items that will be in the annual report to make it more council-friendly. I know we're working on that to make sure that that's in the document when it goes out for public hearing. Then we will have that out. A 30-day comment period is expected, and then we would bring the amendment back for final council approval, likely at the August September meetings, potentially September, October, depending on how the 30-day public hearing time period works out. We would then go into proposed and final rulemaking. In any case, as we've said before, the new system would be in place and used to set 2014 coverage levels. So that concludes my presentation of these points, and I'll gladly take any questions or comments.
Thank you, Doug, for that. There probably will be some questions for you, but what I'd like to do is get a motion on the floor and have the questions come out of discussion on that. Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will move to approve the SBRM draft amendment for public comment.
Seconded by Dave Preble. Discussion. We'll go to the audience first for comments and then back to
Good afternoon, Gib Brogan with Oceana. After the April council meeting, we commented that the document was largely incomplete and outdated at that point, that there were incomplete references to the current management of the fishery and a number of other shortcomings that were in this that would prevent the SBRM from doing the job of providing you folks with the information that you need to manage these fisheries. After looking at the document and hearing after that meeting, my understanding was that there were going to be significant changes that were made, updates that were going to be made to bring this document up to speed and make it reflective of what's happening in these fisheries. After reading the document that you have in front of you, those updates have not been made. There have been, as Doug said, a couple of small changes that were made to the document since April. But overall, updates, things like references to ACL-AM management. There are no references to ACL-AM management and the data needs, the uncertainty of bycatch estimates and how that affects ACL-AM management, for example. There's just no discussion of that. And this is a significant thing. As you set ACLs for these fisheries, scientific uncertainty, management uncertainty, those are significant factors. And if you don't have a handle on bycatch or there's a significant amount of uncertainty around those estimates, that needs to be considered in this. And we were hopeful after the April council meeting that the FMAT was going to go back and consider those items and make those necessary changes. But as it stands right now, this document is incomplete and doesn't do the job that it needs to do. It has references, continues to have references to 2004 information, not just in the technical analysis and but in the discussion, talking about the way the fisheries are managed, and that's really disappointing. And we don't think that this is ready to go out for public comment. We are still pushing to have this in place for 2014. This needs to be in place after it was vacated for 2013. But as it stands right now, the document still has big sections that say this will be updated. And to think that this is going to be ready to go out for comment in July, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done on this one. As far as some of the other things that are in here, the rejection of alternative CVs, that's an item that we've been hitting on for quite a while. The council all the way through the original SBRM was told that the 30% CV was the gold standard. As Mike Pentney told this council many, many times, that is the gold standard. And what we're learning now is that CV is attached to significant uncertainty. And this needs to be explicitly discussed in the SBRM. This is the baseline information that the council uses to assess and manage bycatch in all of these fisheries and manage the ACLs. So it's a footnote in that presentation that it's just listed in the items that were considered but rejected. But it really needs to have a full exploration of what this means, what a 30% CV means, what a 20% CV means and what effect that has on the management of all of these fisheries. Similarly, the rejection of using non-managed species in the analysis. Those non-managed species include things like river herring. And if we don't account for river herring bycatch in the sampling of all of these fisheries, we won't have that CV that's attached to it. We won't have reliable information at the CV of 30% even, or some other more stringent CV. So those non-managed species need to be considered, because bycatch, managed versus unmanaged bycatch, there is no distinction in Magnuson. So that needs to be included in there as well. So we hope that as this moves forward, that significant changes, if this does go forward for public comment in July, there's a lot of work to be done before this is ready to go out for public comment. So if you do elect to move this forward, we hope that you ensure that there's a complete document that goes out that's current and up to date and will get real public comment. As the public comments come back, we have problems with the FMAT process, that the FMAT coming directly to you folks. Every other management action that goes through this council goes to a subcommittee and gets vetted through the subcommittee and gets a full hearing over the course of a day. This is an important issue, and we would hope that the council would convene some kind of an ad hoc committee to consider the public comments, consider each of the alternatives that are in here, and not just rely on, it's usually the third day of a council meeting on a Thursday afternoon when everybody's bleary-eyed, that there's going to be something that's put in front of this council that needs a rubber stamp to move forward. So we hope that it gets fully vetted through a subcommittee, gives the public the opportunity and the council the opportunity to go through this important document and make sure that the alternatives, you understand what's going forward. I think for a large part the previous SVRM went through without a full understanding of what was going on, and we hope that there will be more engagement on that one. I think that's the heart of this. So we hope right now that you'll not real quite sure what to ask you folks to do with this one. You have a document in front of you that needs work, but you also have a deadline to get this in place for January. So it's a rock and a hard place here. So I think moving this forward now with the assurance that it will be complete as it goes out for public comment is probably the best thing you can do, and get promises from the agency that this is going to be that a complete document will be provided for public comment, I think is the way to go, and then look towards having some kind of a committee to review this before it comes back to you in November. Thanks.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Peter Kendall.
Yeah, thank you for your presentation. I have a question that's more of a legal question that, you know, with the lack of funding we have, that the agency has and that the industry has, it does make sense to recommend which fleets will be covered. And on page 23 on the slide where it's you assign coverage by ad hoc, and it says recommendations of fleets that receive coverage, because it makes sense to drop out like the Red Crabs, and then you have certainly a number of different days available. But legally, how is that going to be possible, or is it possible?
Well, if this methodology is adopted by the council and the agency, then that makes it a legal methodology of prioritizing coverage when there is insufficient funds.
Okay, thank you.
Tom Dempsey.
Thanks. I think that's an important question. It almost seems like our process is validate no process, or an ad hoc process, which often I think may come to the same thing. But I appreciate the question and the response. Doug, thanks for your presentation. I have a couple questions. Could you just follow up on the issues raised by Gibb? What is the plan? I mean, understanding that we have a motion in front of us to support this, I mean, are you going to deal with some of the – do you share the previously expressed opinion that there are significant shortcomings or gaps or, unfinished references in the document? And do you anticipate that those will be adequately fleshed out by the time the document actually goes out?
There are actually a reasonable amount of this document that does still need to be updated. The descriptions of the current fishing modes, there's a lot of citations you'll note in the document that have notes that say this section will be updated before going out. I'm not sure I could speak to the fact that the updates that would be done would necessarily meet everything that Oceana requests, but there is a significant amount that the FMET has discussed updating and that we do fully intend to add to this.
Just a few more. And you believe that you can do that in the timeline that we've identified here?
I think we can come very close. The question about whether or not we'll make the August Mid-Atlantic Council meeting, that becomes a question, but I think we can get it out and have a 30-day comment before the September New England Council meeting.
Thanks. How have you handled in this document, and this came up at a recent meeting, how have you handled the information and the analysis we've seen on the observer impacts and the observer effects and how that might affect the necessary coverage levels in our different fisheries? And do you anticipate, including some of the work that Paul Rago and Chad Demarest have done in sort of estimating the impacts and some of the consequences of observer effects that we've seen?
I do anticipate that there will be sections that reference to that and discuss that work that's been done for the at-sea monitoring work, and then Paul's work for that, and Chad, I think, was working on that as well, and as well as the Groundfish PDT has done some work.
Good. I think it's really important to get that information in. I thought they did quite a bit on that. I think that will be important. I just wanted to touch on an issue quickly that we brought up under the sturgeon agenda item earlier at this meeting, and that is our inability to segregate provide resolution data to fishery and instead dealing with fleets. We've seen it with sturgeon, but effectively the large mesh gillnet fishery can't be subdivided into various components, so bycatch issues in one fishery unfortunately can't be teased apart from other fisheries using the same gear. I would just suggest, as I did then, that we should be making every effort through this amendment or any other action that's possible to allow us to get higher resolution information. And I know a trip declaration or targeted fishery declaration isn't easy to do, but I think it would get us a long way, or some similar measure would get us a long way to higher resolution information by fishery. And then finally, I would just say that I'd support the executive committee considering an ad hoc committee discussion prior to bringing this back. I think that makes sense to give it the full vetting.
John Bullard.
I think this is another case of making do because of nowhere near enough resources. We don't have enough time and we don't have enough money. But there's also the issue with observers that, in the ideal world of abundant fish stocks and healthy fishing industries, that observer coverage is something that's supported by the industry. And then you talk about healthy observer coverage ratios, and you're not talking then about lawsuits and other things like that. But we don't have that. And so we're talking about low levels of observer coverage that are already compromised. And that's why we're here. And there's a presumption in this that the government's picking up all the cost of observer coverage when we don't have the resources to do that. We keep saying we'll do this now, but this is not the way it should happen. You should have healthy industries that are picking up the cost of doing this. We're doing it now because, the groundfish fisheries can't do it. But our budgets get shrunk just the way, I'm looking at state directors, their budgets get shrunk every year too. And so we're dealing with making do with not enough time to get this amendment out, not enough resources to provide adequate coverage. And so everything's strained. And so, I feel the same way Gib does, you know. What do you do in a difficult situation like this? I think what you do is you have to keep this thing moving. And so the motion on the table here needs to be supported because we have to keep this thing moving. And we have to keep making it better. Is it ever going to get to the point where it's good? I don't know. Is it going to get to the point where it's good enough? That's what I'm hoping. We'll get to good enough. I don't know whether we'll get to good, but we don't have enough resources right now. The industry is saying, hey, we're not paying for any of this stuff. And really, observer coverage is something that industry, you know, when it's healthy, should be paying for.
Further council comments? Dave Gatel.
Yeah, I support moving this forward. I also support coming up with a way to deal with shortfalls in funding the way you've done it. I think it's important. I don't know if it's a letter to the court that goes with submission or what, to point out that the vast majority of what you need to manage the fishery can be done with very little observer coverage. I mean, when I ran the MREP program and Steve Morosky used to come and give a presentation and show how he could accurately estimate discards with very low levels of coverage. And all these graphs show the same thing. The vast majority of the information is picked up with very little coverage. And I do think, you get very little increase in CV by adding sometimes thousands and thousands of sea days. And that's an important point. I don't think the court has ever understood that because most judges aren't mathematicians. And I think that needs to be made perfectly clear because, as John said, and I'll say it again, John has a responsibility not only to the fishery, but he has a responsibility to the taxpayer. And he also has a responsibility to me because I'm two people. I'm a taxpayer. And I'm a member of industry that has to potentially pay for some of this stuff. And if the vast majority of the information you need can be gotten in a very few trips, that's wise use of the taxpayers' money. Putting thousands and thousands of sea days out there to get marginal increases in precision is, in my opinion, a vast waste of the taxpayers' money. And if it's my own personal money, a vast waste of that, which will probably lead me as an individual to go to court and sue the government for wasting my money to achieve very marginal increases in anything. So I really think this should go forward. I think you need what you have here. I think you've got what you need. I realize that Oceana doesn't agree. But as John said, we're trying to get to good enough. And that's really should be the standard we have to get to. As long as the Science Center can get the information it needs to establish a discard rate, to establish, what's being caught, that's good enough. And quite frankly, and this is just my personal opinion now, if people want more than that, whoever they are, then, I have no problem with them paying for it. Basically, folks, put your money where your mouth is. You want more coverage? Come up here and donate, I don't know, whatever it is, $12, $15 million to John, and you'll get more coverage. I think you can get any better information, but you'll get more coverage. But I don't think it's the taxpayer's responsibility to pay enormous sums of money to get very marginal increases in precision.
Tom Neese.
I'll be real quick. Doug made a comment that some of the measures are going to be cleaned up a little bit as the document goes forward, and I just wanted to point out that one of those sections, it will be the section, I think, on the annual reports. We've got some language to clean up about exactly what information will be provided. Just wanted to get that on the record so you're not surprised later.
Further council comment? Call the question. All those in favor of the motion? 13-0-0. Motion carries. Do you need anything else from us, Doug? Thank you.
Good job, Doug. Small. The third day.
We are now on to other.